Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today in Las Vegas at the 2018 Compliance and Ethics Institute is Casey Ingram. Casey's the General Counsel and Chief Compliance Officer for ISK Americas and was a previous guest on the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. Casey, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate the opportunity.
So today we're going to talk about mergers and acquisitions, which is a difficult area for everyone, including for compliance officers. One of the things, Casey, there's lots of discussion about when an M&A is going on is due diligence. And it's usually more from the business side than the compliance side that people think about. You presented about this issue at SCCE meetings before. What should compliance professionals know about due diligence during the M&A process?
The number one thing to know is that regulators expect you to do it. It's changed a lot over the past several years, but both, for example, the United States Department of Justice and through the Brazil Clean Companies Act consider part of an effective ethics and compliance program to be conducting mergers and acquisitions compliance due diligence. I always sort of view it as an analogy of buying a home. You wouldn't buy a house without a house inspection. You want to see if there are foundational issues or termites or something that you can't see. It's the same thing with buying a company. You can look on the outside and figure out the finances and everything, but someone needs to go in and look and see if there's problems you don't know about. And it helps compliance departments show value because if you do go in and find something, you can either prevent a large problem later or at the same point negotiate a better price because you're buying something that has a defect and it helps out the company in the end.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I think people should also think about is it's also a good opportunity to get an advanced preview if things look good, and sometimes it's better than you think. So is there anything a compliance team should do before a deal is even considered? You know, knowing your company may have an acquisition one day?
The pre-deal activities are crucial because you need to have a seat at the table. Deals tend to happen fast. You need to make sure that you're in with the right people and that they know you're going to be part of the process. Some companies have an established M&A team, and if they do, you need to introduce yourself and become part of that team. Other companies, you just need to find who the point person would be if there's a big deal that would go on, the chief strategy officer, the general counsel. And one thing I always like to caution people, deal makers are tough. They're not just going to say, oh, yeah, come on in, come aboard. They're going to push back. So you have to be assertive. And remember, you're not asking permission. You're just explaining why you're there and seeking buy-in. And so I give training, and I go through examples of how companies have done deals and not done compliance due diligence and what's gone wrong. And then I give examples of companies where it's gone right and show the difference and how the collaboration actually helps the company at the end. And then we focus on resources and timing and plans, because when a deal comes in, you want to make sure you know exactly who's going to be part of the team, how they're going to get things done, how the process is going to flow, so you're not reinventing the wheel at the beginning and everybody's ready, because again, these deals, sometimes they can happen in a few days or a few months.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned something there that you've seen them go bad and you've seen them go really well. Are there any hallmarks that you can see from a compliance perspective that made the deals that went well really go well?
The integration was the key part afterwards. So one example I like to give that happened in the past couple of years, a company called Harris Corporation bought a Chinese company. And when they bought the Chinese company, it didn't have an ethics and compliance program in, and they knew that going in. So the first thing they did was put in an ethics and compliance program and establish a hotline. Within 5 months, somebody called the hotline and said, we have FCPA violations going on. So they investigated it, self-reported it. The person who did the FCP violations got in trouble, but Harris Corporation itself, the DOJ did nothing because they said, you did exactly what we expect. You went in, you integrated your program, you looked for problems, and then you disclosed them.
That's a great story. So you talk about deals happening fast. You need to be a seat at the table. Once the deal starts to come together, any tips you have about how the due diligence should be conducted by the compliance team?
So the business itself needs to do the due diligence because most compliance teams don't have the people or the resources to actually go out and do it themselves. So what I like to do is I create questionnaires that I give to the business team to say, here are the issues I'm looking for. And to do that, before the deal starts, we go and do a quick risk assessment. What industry are we in? Has this company had problems before? What are we worried about? And then I create questionnaires that cover the general questions: who are the officers and directors, what is the status of their compliance and ethics program, and then ones that address the specific risks: antitrust, anti-bribery, is it a regulatory issue? If I don't know it, I'll create the questionnaire and then I'll get an outside expert to bless it to make sure it has the right questions. Mm-hmm. And then I hand that to the due diligence team. And they're usually very simple. It'll be like, do they have a hotline? Yes, no. If they do, is it in all the right languages? Yes, no. They fill that out and they hand it back to the compliance team, and then we review it and figure out what issues are there. And at this point in the process, I always try to have a lawyer on standby to bring in if I need privilege. So if there's an issue where I think we need legal involved, you take care of it through privilege, you determine all the issues, and then you go back to the business and say, here are your options. Mm-hmm. Either do nothing, it's okay, seek remediation, or we need to cancel the deal. Sometimes you can't do all this before you buy, though. So the Department of Justice has been very clear, if you don't have time to do a complete pre-acquisition due diligence, they're okay with that. But after you buy it, you need to go in and do the due diligence and then self-report anything that you find.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. And it's, even if you can't do it beforehand, you better know what you have once you have it. Otherwise, you're just going to end up driving off a cliff potentially. Okay, so we've already started moving into this area of what you do after a close. Obviously, as we said, if you haven't done due diligence before, from a compliance perspective, that's when you dive right in. Is there a role for compliance in the integration process of the business?
This, to me, is where compliance really shows its value, because when you finish a deal and you close it, everybody's tired, everybody's excited, and everybody thinks it's done. But it's not. You need to go through and remediate the problems that you found. You need to integrate your compliance program into the target's compliance program, and that takes a lot of time. And so you have to find certain business people that will be your collaborator, that you say, okay, here's what we need to do, and then I would create integration checklists and say, these are the steps we need to carry out. Then we argue about timing. Because I'm always saying, let's get it done in 30 days.
Is that on the checklist, is argue about timing?
Unfortunately, it's usually the first thing that comes up.
Okay.
There used to be really strict standards. The Department of Justice had told Halliburton these really tight time frames. But they've come back off of that and said you need to do it as quickly as practical. So taking that into account, you try to figure out a time that it allows people some breathing room to do the right thing, but it gets it done in a short enough time that it doesn't look like you're avoiding the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a fine line there, and important one to stay on the right sides of. So what have you found as you go through this integration process in your history, or from what you've read of other organizations, is really the most difficult part of integrating a compliance program after a merger or acquisition?
It's culture clash. The culture makes the big difference. It was interesting, after the presentation that I did yesterday, someone came up to me from Peru and they said, we've been bought multiple times and each time it's the same concern. Are we gonna lose our job? Why don't they trust us? Why are they shoving this down our throat? As a compliance person, you need to understand you're not walking into an area where people are happy to see you all the time. They're scared, they're concerned, and especially if you're an established company buying a startup, you have completely different cultures. There was a recent Harvard Business Review article talking about the Amazon-Whole Foods merger and how Amazon was what they called a tight culture and Whole Foods was a loose culture. So they did a study, I think it was around 4,500 different cases, and found that when you combine a tight culture and a loose culture, you actually tend to lose money. Well, from a compliance perspective, you're not focused on the return on investment as much as you are making sure the right thing happens. So what I have found is I tailor the program to the new culture. Sometimes it may not work to go in with the same thing that you have, but as long as the results are the same, it's okay. And one example of that is ERP systems. I dealt with a situation where we had multiple different ERP systems for different companies, but we needed to put in trade compliance. So the comment was, well, let's wait and just get a single ERP system and do it then. And I said, no, we don't want to wait. I will take the time and write a different procedure for every different ERP system to make sure we have something in place. And that way people felt comfortable going forward and it didn't cause the upheaval that just trying to change everything at once would have.
Yeah, and that's not something, the boat's rocking enough already without compliance adding to it. I mean, a lot of ways we can smooth the waters. This has been really great. Any other tips you have for people of where to learn more about this and how to handle it? Obviously, they missed your session here, though the slides, like for every other presentation, will be on the SEC website in the resources section, or events, one of the two. Any other advice?
Well, the SECE has the Compliance and Ethics Manual, and there's an entire section devoted to this that goes through from beginning to end the things you need to look for, the issues you might face, and it's a great resource that you can have on hand.
Thanks. Thanks for the plug. Thanks for the wisdom, and thanks for taking time away from the sessions here to talk to me. I want to also thank all of you who listened to this podcast today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.